video podcast. We are here live from the 23rd Chaos Communication Congress in Berlin. My name is Markus Beckedahl and my guest today is Rikke Frank Jørgensen from Digital Rights DK in Denmark. Rikke, you are involved in the campaigns against data retention. What is a data retention?
Data retention is this new provision which is being implemented in Europe over the next years, whereby all ISPs must retain traffic data of users. So it's basically traffic data of our telephone calls, mobile calls, email communication, and in Denmark also to a certain extent session logging when we log onto the internet. So,
what does it mean? What really is retained?
The problem with data retention and why many people are concerned, including myself, from a human rights privacy perspective, is that you're retaining a massive amount of data about our individual patterns when we communicate online. So you're basically building a surveillance infrastructure that is much more invasive than what we would have in the physical space. And even though this all these data about us are only used if there is a concrete criminal investigation, this is usually the argument from the law enforcement side. What is the problem? We will only use the data if there's an actual crime being investigated. But the problem is that normally with crime investigation, you only pull out people if there's a concrete suspicion. But here you basically tap into all these data and retain them just in case they might be needed. So in that way, you're really derogating from a very fundamental principle of a concrete suspicion, because you think it's so important that law enforcement can get access to these data just in case.
So they are creating a whole surveillance infrastructure in Europe for retaining data of 450 million European citizens?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And in Denmark, it was actually stipulated in the anti-terror law already in the summer of 2002. But because there was so much opposition and the ISPs were really against it for many reasons, both out of cost arguments, but also because they felt that it's not really a police task that they want to go into, it was postponed and postponed and postponed in Denmark. And then the political clue then was to move it to the EU level and basically be a very strong supporter at EU level for data retention. And to talk about the positive experiences from Denmark at a point where we had not even implemented it in Denmark. And then once it was adopted at EU level, then go back to the national scene in Denmark and say, okay, now it's EU policy, so now it has to be implemented very fast. So that just happened a few months ago.
And now there's a European directive on data retention, and mm-hmm. the national governments are debating it. When will be this surveillance infrastructure?
It depends. The member states can apply for having a prolongation before implementing it. But basically, over the next 2 or 3 years, it's supposedly a national law in all the EU countries.
Is there a chance to fight against it in the moment?
Well, the Germans are good. In Germany, you have a very good campaign, probably the strongest one in Europe against data retention, with a huge class action thing, where the argument goes that if the police want to retain our data just in case, when then we retain or we collect people just in case, they would be willing to sue the government on this and say that it's unconstitutional according to the German constitution. So the battle that's going on here in Germany is very good. I think in Denmark it's really difficult to be an optimist, because it was in our law already from the summer of 2002, and we were able to fight the actual implementation up till now. But now where it's adopted at EU level and it was already passed in the Danish parliament, it's very hard to get the order pulled back, basically.
And at European level, how can people get involved in fighting against data retention? Or what can people do in other countries outside mm-hmm. of Germany?
Yeah, there are several actors in Europe where you can basically do something. There's European Digital Rights, which is a network of digital rights organizations in Europe, 25 groups all over, and E3.org, they've had quite a big campaign against data retention. Also Privacy International in London, UK is very active in the fight. So those are two more umbrella-like organizations that have been fighting it at EU level.
And as volunteers, how can volunteers help raising attention for that?
Well, I think it's really important to link up to a number of different communities so that it's not only the very technical community that speak about these issues, but that you get it more out in the mainstream media. And here everyone can play a role to basically link it to their own networks and to make sure to make the public more aware of what's happening, because very, very few people know about this. And it's one of the fastest pieces of EU legislation that has been passed. So, there hasn't been that much publicity.
Okay, thank you very much and have fun here.
Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm going to put on my reporter hat for a second. Is it possible in countries that have data retention policies to send your traffic through Tor or another proxy server in order to mask exactly where you're going online and what you're doing?
Yeah, there are various technical ways you can circumvent it, which makes it even a bit more ironic, because on the one hand you're building this massive infrastructure of retaining data that most citizens will just fall into because they are not technical experts. But if you really want to disguise your communication, you can do so not only by technical means but also by using some of the institutions that are not covered in the directive. So for instance, in the Danish implementation, if you use if you go on the net at universities or libraries or smaller, you know, housing associations, communities, you would not be covered. Also, a number of email services would not be covered. Hotmail, Gmail, etc. is not covered in the Danish implementation. And I mean, these holes, it's like they're building this huge fence, and then at the same time, there are huge holes that you can just go through, which makes it even a bit more ironic. But when I post this argument to the Ministry of Justice people, I have actually asked them about this, then they say, yeah, well, just because it's difficult and we're not perfect doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. So.
Do you think this will create a demand for ISPs or other services which allow you to go through the fence? Is this a business opportunity?
For security products, you mean?
For security products, ISPs that don't comply, and other ways to go around the restrictions, will people take advantage of these holes and create businesses around them?
Yeah, that's definitely an option. And also, again, if I look at the Danish executive order, the implementation order, non-commercial ISPs, for instance, are not included. So there's another, I mean, there's another whole or option.
Do you see non-commercial organizations, non-profits, beginning to think about taking advantage of this and running their own ISPs that are exempt from the law?
We haven't seen it yet because it's so recent in Denmark, but I can imagine that it's coming up. And I think it's also interesting to remember that in the US, that we are always referring to in Europe as the big surveillance country, there's actually nothing like data retention. There's data preservation where it's based on a concrete suspect, but not this general mass retaining of data.
Data retention poses some problems for human rights groups, of course, mm-hmm. if they're working with sensitive data, collecting, say, for example, witness reports from people who have witnessed human rights abuses, and they're trying to do research or send this data to other members of their organization. Clearly, they don't want their activities surveilled online because it puts people in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. It puts people in danger.
Yeah.
So can you make an argument against data retention that says if you retain this data, you actually put people in danger whose safety depends on a certain level of privacy?
Yeah, you could definitely make a human rights argument against data retention using, at European level, you would use the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 8, or the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the right to privacy, because you're absolutely right. I mean, of course, the right to privacy is not unlimited, but there has to be very specific reasons, and it has to be proportionate. And most lawyers would argue that this is not proportionate because there is not a concrete suspect, because it's such a general mass collection of data that is truly invading the right to privacy. That is the premise, basically. But often in the discussion, it's it goes the other way around. It's almost in these anti-terror times as if it's the citizen that have to argue why they don't want the surveillance. Because if you have done nothing wrong, what's there to fear is often the policy argument. But actually, it's the state who has to argue and who has to prove why the privacy invasion is necessary in that specific case. So the burden of the proof is on the state. But that's often forgotten in the policy debate about these things. Hmm.
Yes, I would agree with that, definitely. For instance, there was an interesting discussion in the United States about Google Earth, mapping, you know, every building, every land feature. And women who ran shelters for women who were involved in domestic abuse situations where their partners were abusing them did not want the location of their women's shelter being broadcast on Google Earth. And so they went to Google Earth and they said, hey, this puts people, women, in danger. Take it off Google Earth. And they did. So could you make an argument to the state somewhere along those lines that points to an example of where this information would put people in direct jeopardy?
Yeah, I think you could basically use, as with data retention or Google Earth, you can basically use the same line of argument. It's pretty clear to me that it's a privacy case and it's a potential privacy violation case, also the one you're mentioning. Of course, depending on also how close you can get to the actual places and location you can see, etc. But still, out of principle, we haven't had so many cases yet, court cases, on these issues, but I'm pretty sure they will come. And that will also create more awareness in the human rights community of lawyers about the technology issues, because I know in the US it's probably the place where the debate is most advanced, but I think in Europe we're still pretty much struggling with linking up the various communities and getting the human rights people to basically take in these new challenges related to the use of technology and the internet specifically. Because just a few years back when I was talking to my human rights colleagues about these issues, they still thought they were a bit marginal, or like we're fighting torture or violence against women, or, you know, refugees, what have you, and this internet thing, I mean, is really a human rights issue. But more and more people are really recognizing the huge implication, especially related to the right to privacy, freedom of expression, and your self-determination, personal integrity, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm from the United States, a country that tortures people and abducts them and holds them without access to lawyers, its own citizens as well as the citizens of other nations. And it's very clear also that the Muslim community in the United States is under intense surveillance, and they worry about being targeted specifically. And then, of course, EFF discovered recently that the NSA had convinced AT&T to surveil a lot of data traffic throughout the country. And, of course, they're fighting that in court. Do you see this data retention tool used perhaps to target specific groups of people who would be put under special data retention pressures or observations because they're considered perhaps politically threatening?
Well, I think it's a legitimate fear to say that every time you start collecting large amounts of data or putting in place structures to collect those data, then you also create some demand, right? So now all these data are there, why not use them for more stuff than what they were originally collected for? And of course, data protection law in Europe would generally prohibit that, but who knows, then there might come new legislation with new purposes. I think the most unlikely scenario is that this surveillance infrastructure will be removed. I mean, once it's there, you're starting this massive collection, and then it's only the fantasy or the lack of imagination on the law enforcement side to come up with, you know, new ideas on how to use it. We actually had a recent proposal in Denmark, also as part of our anti-terror fight, as it's called, which was related to data retention, where it was scanning, area-based scanning of telephone calls. So you wouldn't go in after a concrete number, but you would, for instance, go after an area, like say this area, like this Congress Center here, and say that for some specific investigations, they could get a court order to basically surveil communication in this area. That has, so far, the opposition against that has been stronger than the politicians in favor, but it's popping up all the time, new suggestions like that.
Of course, I presume the government itself would be exempt from this type of surveillance. You know, I keep thinking about, for instance, the Tor servers and Tor, which is partly financed and supported by the U.S. Navy, and many government people use it because they see value in being able to anonymize their government traffic. Do you see perhaps a branch of the government in Denmark that values privacy at all, arguing for less surveillance?
Yes, in our Ministry of Research and Technology, you would definitely find people that are very aware of these privacy issues and are also quite proactive in promoting secure communication. Yeah, so you have that. And the people that are most pushy in terms of data retention is the Minister of Justice and Interior Affairs, as in many other countries, because they basically look after the interest of the police and law enforcement. But yeah, you do find these other more privacy-oriented policies also. And actually in Denmark, Danish industry, the industry of the association of IT companies have actually started to take a very strong stand on privacy and has developed privacy guidelines that is basically an advice to IT companies on how to make data protection law a reality in the way that they design IT solutions and implement them and carry out the daily work.
And of course, the other big one of the other big users of Tor are companies which want to protect their trade secrets or perhaps get other people's trade secrets and not be detected to avoid espionage, industrial espionage. Is there any outcry from companies in Denmark that see this as a threat to their corporate privacy?
Yeah. Actually, the industry has been pretty vocal, especially the IT industry and the ISPs also, but also IT industry more generally. But it's also interesting, this thing you say with the role of private parties like Google Earth or an internet service provider, which is also often a private party, and the way that they are really assigned more and more public policy tasks, police tasks, basically, in this case. And this is another area where the internet and the whole online world really challenges the way you think about human rights, because you basically have a public sphere online that is regulated to a certain extent by private parties, which is different than the physical space. So there's also something there about the role of private parties and public space that's quite different.
Good point. Very interesting.